Welcome. This is another regular Saturday night sanctuary meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Mike Toomey, and I'm your alcoholic leader for this evening. Please remove any food or drinks you have taken with you into the carpet area on my right. Because this is a large meeting, we ask that you save just one seat for yourself plus one other. Now that the meeting has started, feel free to take any unoccupied seat. If you have a vacant seat next to you, will you please raise your hand so anybody standing can find a seat? Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other so that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. I've said that I am an alcoholic. Will any others present please raise their hands? All right. Not to embarrass you, but to enable us to get to know you at the coffee break and after the meeting, will any newcomers in your first 60 days of sobriety please stand and give us your first name and disease? Please hold your applause until all of the newcomers have introduced themselves, and will please stand and begin on my left.
Brad.
Greg. Hi, Sheila. Andrea. Jason. Hi, Rick. Hi, Brian. Jeff. All right, welcome. If there are any visiting alcoholics from outside the greater Los Angeles area, will you please stand and give us your names and tell us where you're from? All homegrown. All right. Well, the Al-Anons with us tonight, please raise your hands. Welcome. Experience has shown the AA program will work for any alcoholic who is sincere in his or her desire to stop drinking. Program of recovery is defined for us in Chapter 5 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Is entitled How It Works. Tonight I've asked Paul to read that portion of Chapter 5, which contains our 12 steps to recovery.
Give me a standing fucking ovation.
Standing ovation. Paul, alcoholic.
Yeah, we're impressed with everything here. Chapter 5, How It Works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program, usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of becoming honest with themselves. They are such unfortunates. They are not a fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders. It says, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we're like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. At some of these we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us, but there is one who is all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for the knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, "What an order, I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is, we are willing to grow along the spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter 2, the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. C, that God couldn't would if here saw.
Thanks, Paul. Format for this meeting is a 10-minute speaker, our secretary's announcements, a coffee and snack break, and then our main speaker. Our first speaker tonight is my friend Jim D.
All right, here we go. How do I start this thing? Let's start. Simple. My name's Jim. I'm an alcoholic. And I got alcoholism, and it's never going away. And today I know that beyond any shadow of a doubt. Whoa, I'm nervous. Half these people in here know me, and they know my story, and I'm nervous. Let's make this easy. My home group is the Monday Night Men's Stag at the Hermosa Beach Alano Club, and I've been sober since going there 13 years and some change, one day at a time. And I'm going to aim my pitch mostly at the new guys around here. I want to remind everybody that this is a one day at a time program. For me to walk in the doors and think that I'd end up standing here speaking to somebody saying I had 13 years was something that wasn't going to happen, because I could not get 13 years, but I can get through a day. I can get through a day sober. And everything I do, boy, these things are just like right in my eyeballs. Everything I do around here to stay sober, I do to prevent that first drink. And to me, everything you hear out of my mouth tonight is stuff I've seen through my eyes, through AA. And although it is my opinion, I base everything that I've done in Alcoholics Anonymous on what I've learned here from other folks that have been sober and been down this path ahead of me. I'm not an original thinker. There isn't an original thought on keeping sober in me. There were quite a few way back when. I took my first drink when I was 13. It was a half pint of whiskey, and I drank it all, and I drank it alone. And that was my first experience with alcohol. And I was free, man, and I was off and running. And I'm not going to tell you that it was a terrible time in the beginning, because I had an awful lot of fun. And I got into the real heavy drinking part of it somewhere around 19. But before that, you know, I just couldn't buy alcohol. So drugs is a part of my history. I did an awful lot of LSD when I was in high school. And when I was 16, I got into trouble with the law with my employment status as a up-and-coming drug dealer. And we'll leave it at that. You know, so here's my history so far. 13, my first drink, I'm drunk. 16, I'm in trouble with the law already. Got pulled over for a 502. At 17, and let go. At 19, both my parents had died and left me a bag of money, and I was off and running with a big chip on my shoulder. And I drank for the next 20 years, you know, like a pig. And I don't ever remember crossing the line from social drinking to alcoholic. Man, I was out there. I did everything to get loaded. Snot slinging drunk was the way I wanted to be, you know, and I wanted to be out of myself. And I knew I was crazy, and I knew I was sane, and I knew I was better than everybody, and I knew I was worse than everybody else. I just didn't know what was going on and what was wrong with me. And I spent a lot of time trying to stay sober. I entered a hospital when I was 30 years old because I just had enough. And they handed me a big book and a 12 and 12, and I just hung my head and went, "Oh my God, what have I done? You know, one more time I'm in some kind of jam." Next thing it'll be, I'll be selling roses at the airport, you know. And, but what I found out there, you know, it was a crash course on AA, was that, you know, this thing that goes on around here is probably going to be the only way I'm going to stay sober, and I was not ready. You know, I came out of there, and I stayed sober for a year out of spite, and I don't know how, but I did. But what happened was, as it says in that last paragraph of Chapter 3, there will come a time when you will have no defense, you know, and I didn't, and I drank. And it was the most terrifying thing to me to put the ice cubes in the glass and to pour the rum, saying to myself, don't do this, you know. I knew where I was going. And I put it to my lips, and I was off and running, and for another year and a half, man, I tried everything in the world to stay sober, and my plan was the Jimbo plan of sobriety. And there's a few folks around here that know what that is, and I'm going to tell the rest, you know. There's a little bit of self-help books in there, and there's a little bit of pot smoking, an awful lot of coke snorting, and freebasing. And I got to the point where I was shooting raw dope instead of drinking alcohol and thinking that this is okay. I'm okay with this. I was not sane. I finally got fed up. I had started going to some meetings, and I met this guy there who took my phone number, and I gave him my phone number. I don't know why, and he gave me his, which I threw away. And you know, one more time, you know, I was out there, I was doing my plan again, and I ended up drunk and loaded, and you know, lying in a bed at 3 in the afternoon. Money's all gone. How am I going to pay the rent? Nobody wants to hire me anymore. What am I going to do? Phone rings, and it was this guy on the other end of the line. What he was doing is the drill that we do around here. Call the newcomer and see how they're doing, see what they're up to. And for some reason, I told the truth and said, not too good. And he invited me to come to this men's stag, which I showed up to. And from that day, I have not had to take the first drink. And I'm real grateful for that. What I heard in the beginning was keep coming back. So if you're new, what I'm going to tell you to do is just keep coming back. You'll hear the music in your time. You know, there's a lot of stuff we do around here to stay sober. There's a lot of stuff people are going to tell you what to do to stay sober. In the beginning, all I could hear was keep coming back, and I picked up a little as I went along. And like I said, it's been 13 years and some change. It's a long time for somebody like me. The guy that walked in here back then and the guy in today are two different people. And it's hard for me to believe I was that person back then. But I get to see it in other people's eyes, and I can turn around and go back there. All I have to do is stop coming to meetings, stop doing this drill, and pretty soon, well, that doobie will be okay, you know, and I could follow it with a little cerveza. And, you know, what's one shot of tequila? I don't want to go back there. I don't want to go back to waking up underneath a parked car because I need a little nap. You know, I don't want to be scraping heroin off my table and putting it into a syringe thinking, well, I'm not drinking alcohol, so this is all right. You know, I got to find some real lows, and being sober, I got to find some real highs. I have a roof over my shoulders. I have a car to drive. There's a few bucks in my pocket. I have a job to go to. I just got back from a vacation in Cozumel for a week. I could have missed all that stuff. There was nowhere in the big book, though, where it promised me a trip to Cozumel or a roof over my shoulders. What I am promised out of here is that I don't ever have to take that first drink again if I don't want to. And all I have to do is the drill that's laid out around here. I have found it to be true. And I'm real grateful for that. I'm real grateful that the rest of you folks are here. Left to my own demise, I'm doomed, just like it says in the book. There's steps that we follow, which is our guidelines, our roadmap here. There are also traditions, and I'm a big fan of the traditions. This protects our outfit, you know. You try to explain to a non-alcoholic out there what goes on in here, and they haven't got a clue, and I quit wasting my breath, you know. At work, I have told a few of my bosses, you know, just send them to me, and I've left it at that. And, you know, it's heartbreaking to be in AA and see some of your folks not make it. You know, that guy that called me is my sponsor, and he's still my sponsor. And he's flirting with his program by not going to meetings. I'll finish up. My professional job is to push buttons, so I got that real good. And I worry about it, but the deal is off when one of us drinks, and neither one of us has drank. So I don't know what keeps everybody else sober. I know what keeps me sober through AA, and I sponsor a lot of guys, or have sponsored a lot of guys, and a lot of them have stayed sober, you know. But I've attended funerals, too. This is a fun program. We have a lot of fun around here, and it's a good time, and it's also a horrific thing to watch somebody drink themselves to death. And I don't want that to happen to me. I don't want anybody to see me. I want to go out swinging. I'm real glad the rest of you folks are here, and thanks.
Thanks, Jimmy. Okay. Okay. Now we'll have the treasurer's report, okay? That's a new deal. All right. Go.
I haven't seen that before.
That's all right. Hi, I'm Mick Neal. I'm the alcoholic treasurer. Last week we collected $192. We paid out $82, and we have a new balance of $836. And our rent is paid up till October, so I'm going to make some donations. And I put a copy of the treasury report over on the table if anybody wants to take a look at it. Nobody ever asked me to see the book, so I figured I'd put it over there. Thank you very much, and have a great night.
I guess the treasurer's report picks up a certain amount of importance when the treasurer swings with a bankroll, huh? Tonight I've asked Bob M. to read the 12 traditions for us while we silently observe the 7th. If you have a court card, put it in the basket, and it'll be signed for you after the meeting. Thanks.
I want to be treasurer. Bob Alcoholic. You could have at least had this ready for me. All right. 12 traditions. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. 4, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. 6, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and film. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personality.
Okay, secretary's announcements. All right.
Okay, welcome to the Sanctuary Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Mike Bergman, and I'm your Alcoholic Secretary. In naming this meeting Sanctuary, we mean it to be a safe place as a retreat and refuge where each can personally observe the 11th tradition. I'd like to ask you kindly now, don't take any food over into the carpeted area. It gets kind of slimy, and the kiddies have to sit on it and take their little naps there. This is a non-smoking meeting. If you smoke, please do so outside. Help us keep the schoolyard clean by depositing your cigarette butts in the flower pots provided. A lot of you, I wish when you smoke, you put your glasses on so you can hit the pots, you know. You'll see me out there with some looking around for cigarette butts at the end. So please try and hit the flower pot. It takes a lot of meeting a lot of people to make this meeting happen. Tonight's crew was the leader, Mike T. Give him a hand. Setup was Chuck, Patrick, Mike, and Bill. Bill did the coffee. In the kitchen was Sharon, Barbara, Tom, Mike, Ken, John, and Mike. Let's give him a hand. I have a tape announcement from Robbie, the tape guy.
I'm Robbie Robertson, and I'm an alcoholic. I have the privilege of being the tape guy at this meeting. If you'd like a copy of the tape of tonight's meeting, help me out. Over on that table to my right, there's a sign-up sheet near that wooden rack of tapes. If you want a copy of tonight's tape, which will include Jim's marvelous talk as well as our main speaker, just put your name down on that sign-up sheet. Pay for it when you pick it up. Costs us $3. That rack has a selection of tapes from this meeting going back over several years. That list on the wall that goes clear back to January of 1990 and a few beyond, those are all available. If there's something you want, if I don't have it with me, I'll make it for you. Also on the table are some of the old guys like Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob and some of your favorites and some of mine. Any tapes you order that I don't have with me tonight will be available here next Saturday. Sooner if you need them, mailed, delivered, whatever. Thank you for allowing me to be of service. Thank you for my rich flow of life.
Now everybody's chanting rich, full life. There's nothing sacred. We have a literature announcement from Bill.
Thank you.
Good coffee.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm Bill, alcoholic. I'm the book guy. Robbie's a tape guy. We have books back there for sale. The ones that we sell are Alcoholics Anonymous. This is our big book. For those that you are new here, this is what our program is all about. It's in that book, so be sure to have one. If you don't, if you can't afford it, see me and we'll work out a deal. The pamphlets are free. There's also some new LA directories that just came out. There's a brand new one. So when you buy them, just leave $1.25 on the table. Thank you for being in service. Bye.
Okay, Grapevine, William. William. Okay, our CSR GSR said there's a small announcement. Mike?
Hi.
How handsome.
I promise I'll keep it brief. Okay. Mike Alcohol.
Thank you.
Drink all you want over there. Okay, if you're like a total slacker and kind of like want to be a part of this deal but don't want to commit too much, the CSR is a perfect commitment. It's once a month, and you come back and give a report. That's it. That's all you got to do. So there's a lot of meetings that don't have CSR, so something to consider. Anyway, there's a central office managers meeting in Arkansas. So I think it's in September. And George O'Hagan's going to represent South Bay as our office manager. He'll be attending there. And all your contributions to the basket, that pays for him to go back there. And I have a financial report here if you're wondering where all the money goes to. And I'll show you at the break if you're interested. Speaking of the money, they encourage groups to send in small donations. I think $800 is big enough to send in. And but normally they prefer smaller donations faster than big donations at one time because it helps us keep in the black. And actually, I didn't know this, but it was just brought up. Individuals can make their own personal contributions. Like a lot of times people will do it around the time of their birthday. And I guess there's a limit on it. An individual can send in up to $1,000 a year as a donation. I guess it's a tax write-off of some kind. So, anyway, $1,000 a year is a lot less than you would have spent drinking, probably. So, anyway. Okay, also H&I. I have clearance forms here if you want to go on a prison panel. You have to be clear to go on a panel, and it's generally encouraged not to have warrants if you go on a prison panel. So, it's up to you, though, but I have the forms here. And H&I is always looking for panel leaders, and a lot of times, like the Monday night, instead we sponsor a panel that goes to a prison, and I don't know. Does anybody want to like be a panel leader for this meeting? I mean, we got like 200 people here. Does one person want to sponsor a panel? Okay. I can tell my ass. Okay, there's a speakeasy newsletter that comes out quarterly, and I have a copy here. And everyone's encouraged to participate in this. You can send in stories, jokes, poems, illustrations, and so forth. And email is preferred, actually. And the email address for central office is southbayaa@earthlink.net. And anyone knows that anything about desktop publishing can definitely help out. If you're interested, just call central office. Phone volunteers are always needed. I do it. It's a totally easy commitment. You can sit around, pay your bills, and read magazines, and once in a while someone calls. It's a pretty cool commitment. And the last thing is that Labor Day picnic is coming up a week from this Monday. And I don't know if Preston's here tonight. He said he was going to do a chili thing for our group. But anyway, we have something, and he'll probably hit you up to help him out that day. The only thing they really suggested was if you smoke, to please bring a coffee can, because I guess the biggest problem they have there every year is a bunch of cigarette butts laying on the ground. And the city doesn't really like it. And the other option was, of course, not to smoke, but that's probably not going to happen. So anyway, if you can bring a cigarette butt, that would help out. And carpool, if possible. I mean, can. Yeah. Whatever. No funny cigarettes either. But and then also to carpool, if possible, to save on parking. And if you don't want to go, if you care less about it, but you got a couple extra dollars, the tickets are $5. I have them. I think I do. If I don't, I'll be here next week, and I'll have them then. And they're $5 a piece, and you can send somebody from Recovery House or something like that. And I'm sorry? And brownies. Yeah, bring brownies, too. They can always use more brownies. And all this stuff is like a fundraiser for central office. So there's a place that when the newcomer calls in, there's a place for them to call and someone answer the phone. So it's for a good cause. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Mike. We don't celebrate birthdays. However, we do honor them by having those people observing their A anniversary stand, starting on my left, declaring their name and number of years in an audible voice, sober, and... Mark. It is the summer. They're still out on the beach. I'd like to welcome the newcomers who identified themselves, and especially those who did not. God bless you. The out-of-towners and the Al-Anons. Thank you for letting me be of service. When you hear the bell at the end of the break, please promptly take your seats. Please.
Now, our main speaker will share his experience, strength, and hope with us. Please join me in welcoming Johnny H. from Long Beach.
Hi, everybody. My name's Johnny, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm glad to be here tonight, and I'm glad to be sober. I'm glad to be in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to thank Jim for extended privilege of me participating in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. It always been my opinion, and I hope it always remains such, that it's some type of a privilege to be allowed to come and sit in these rooms. I hope I don't ever get it through my sick head that I have a right to everything that goes on here just because I was lucky enough to stumble into a room and get sober and stay that way. When I'm asked to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous, I think it's some type of an unearned gift or unearned privilege that I really can't figure out why it's been extended to me. Because I've been sober without any type of alcohol or mood altering or psychic medication in my system. I haven't had any near beer Prozac either. Since sometime before the fourth day of November, 1959. How do you think I feel about that? Do you hear that? And I've looked back over my life a number of times with inventories and listened to fifth steps and so on and so forth. And I have never found anything in my life prior to coming to Alcoholics Anonymous that fateful day that would entitle me to live the good life that I live today. And the only thing that I can attribute my good life to is exactly what the first speaker, Jim, talked about a great deal, a program of recovery called Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I haven't been anywhere else. I haven't engaged in any other kind of thing. I haven't any other type of therapy introduced in my life. The only thing that I can attribute that to is The first 164 pages of our book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and the people who went before me and showed me the way. It's the most amazing thing that I know of, because left to my own devices, I wouldn't be here 15 minutes. My first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous was very nearly my last meeting, because I sat in your meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous that day in November, and you talked to me about being sober. And I didn't think Alcoholics Anonymous had anything to offer me. And the reason I didn't think that is because I was as physically sober when I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous as I am right now. It's physically sober. But that had always seemed to be my problem. If I could have stayed loaded forever, I'd have never came to Alcoholics Anonymous. But I kept getting interrupted out there on my happy road of destiny by people in little black and white cars. They had a bad habit about that. Every once in a while, some genius somewhere sits around and dreams up some breakthrough in the treatment of alcoholism to help us. I mean, they come up with some lulus, I'll tell you. A few years ago, they came up with what they thought was a great breakthrough. Everybody was just gooky over. It was called intervention. God, they were, oh, intervention. The Los Angeles County Sheriff's knew about it in 1940. And if you live the way I live, they'll intervene in your life, too. You don't have to have Mama go down there and talk to the therapist. But you know, I've been sober from that fateful moment before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, as I right up to this very moment in my life, and I've discovered some tremendous facts. What I thought sober was is not what sober is. Now, isn't that amazing? See, what I thought sober was when I first come to Alcoholics Anonymous is a case of undrunkenness. And undrunkenness is nothing more than the absence of any type of alcohol or chemicals in my system. That's all undrunkenness is. But it's a far cry from sobriety. And Alcoholics Anonymous talks a great deal about sobriety. And sobriety to me is the ability to live peacefully and comfortably and joyously with me and you and God. And if I couldn't do that, I'd be drunk before I got home tonight. And the reason I know that is because I could never do it prior to coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, and there's a very good chance that if I wake up tomorrow morning with some type of an idea that I've been sober long enough, I'm going to let somebody else do it, there's a very good chance I'll be drunk again because I'm an alcoholic. You put me in the wrong place at the wrong time and the wrong set of circumstances, I'm going to be drunk. I'm an alcoholic. I don't have any more choice about that than I do about flying around this room. So it's become absolutely and totally necessary in my life in all these years to stay in some type of a safe place, as you talk about in the name of this meeting. And not only in Alcoholics Anonymous and the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, but I have to learn to live in some degree of comfort that will allow me to live comfortably enough where it isn't necessary for me to have to drink. Because an alcoholic of my type who becomes restless and irritable and discontent will have to drink alcohol again. And I don't really know about it, but I've been sober around here a long time. I've seen an awful lot of people come and go in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I don't know why it is that I was allowed to stay sober. I really don't. I don't think anybody else knows why some of us get to stay sober and some of us don't. But what I really come to believe, it isn't because I'm anything special in God's eyes. It isn't anything because I'm some type of one of God's chosen few who have been allowed to shine on the world. I just come to understand that maybe I'd had it when I got here. Maybe I just had it. Maybe I just had all the crap kicked clean out of me. Maybe I just had all the images strangling me to death. Maybe all that nonsense that I'd been going through all my life was just too much of a fact for me around anymore. A guy asked me one time, he said, what do you think you wanted when you come to Alcoholics Anonymous? I said, I thought about a lot, and I'll tell you, if I could have put my finger on one thing the day I come to Alcoholics Anonymous I wanted, I just wanted to lay down at night and sleep. I just wanted to sleep all night long without waking up with the nightmares of the atrocities I committed out there in my self-centered, self-serving run through life. It's just an amazing thing to me because I grew up with a lot of things in my life. I grew up knowing an awful lot about alcohol. Everybody in my family drank alcohol. They were all alcohol drinkers. I don't know whether they were alcoholics or not. None of them ever admitted it. They were just Irish. They didn't have any type of religion hold their guilt down, so they just went crazy, them people. They drank each other's whiskey and stole each other's women and beat each other up. Went to penitentiaries and worked in them whorehouses on the other side of the tracks. So they had a hell of a time, them people. But they seemed to what that did for me was nothing more than just for me to say, I'm not going to drink alcohol. You see, I had a ringside seat sitting around watching whiskey destroy people's lives. And so I said to myself, I'm not going to drink. I'm going to step out in that world, have something, and do something, and be something. So I started looking for a way out of this dilemma a long time before I was here. I had this restlessness and irritability about me, which is symptoms of probably the most deadly disease that mankind's ever known in its history. I didn't know that those were the symptoms of this disease. I didn't know anything about alcoholism at all. I didn't know anything about anything. I thought alcohol and alcoholism were one and the same. But what a fast farce that is. That's the biggest farce that I've ever heard of. People who drink alcohol are alcoholics. That's not necessarily true. You have to drink alcohol to be an alcoholic. How's that for a confusion if you're new in Alcoholics Anonymous? Just because you drink alcohol doesn't make you an alcoholic. But you have to drink alcohol to be an alcoholic. I didn't understand that, so I started looking for a way out of this dilemma a long time before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. My first excursion into finding a way out of this dilemma that I was in was sitting in my grandmother's church with my grandmother's child. You see, my grandmother lived when she was 90 years old. She never took a drink of alcohol or smoked a cigarette in her life. My grandmother got everything she ever needed out of her daily pilgrimage to the little church that she lived in. And I went over there and sat in the church with my grandmother not knowing what was wrong with me. I thought that all I'd have to do is go where my grandmother goes and do what my grandmother does, and I'd be like my grandmother. See, what I didn't know is that I'm not like my grandmother. My grandmother's not alcoholic. I didn't know that I was bodily and mentally different from my grandmother. I didn't have any idea at all. As I sat in that church that day, waited for the thing to happen to Grandma, happened to me, and nothing seemed to happen that day that I know of. I didn't know that scarred me until many years later in therapy that it bothered me somewhat, I suppose. But what I found an answer to my life was what an alcoholic of mine, my type, the book talks about fine, as I sit on the back porch of my grandfather's house one day watching my grandfather drink whiskey out of a fruit jar. He put it down and I picked it up and took a drink of it. That's all I did. And the next couple of minutes of my life was what makes me an alcoholic. I'm not an alcoholic because I spent the next 20 years of my life creating mayhem out there in the world. I'm an alcoholic because I have some type of an abnormal reaction to alcohol. And what I damn near died learning here and before I got here, that everybody who drinks alcohol doesn't get the same type of reaction from it that I do. I didn't know that. Because alcohol was a wonderful thing in my life. It went down inside of me, kind of stilled the screaming madness. It took me from the black pit of nothingness and stood me into the gray fringes of the business of living. It installed in me some type of arrogance. It said, damn you, world, it's all right. I'm not good enough to be around the good people, but I'm too good to be around the bad people. It's okay right here. That's what alcohol did for me. But you know, that's not the thing that drove me into the gates of insanity and death and beyond. What got me was what kicked in right behind that is limited to alcoholics of my type. Our book talks about it. Not anything that I thought up and not anything I dreamed about. It talks about, our co-founder talks a great deal about alcoholics of my type. People who need some type of a spiritual answer to a spiritual malady. That's what alcoholism is. Alcoholism is a spiritual malady coupled with some type of obsession of the mind and an allergy of the body. That's what I have. I didn't know that. Because what happened to me when I took a drink of alcohol happened to me every time I took a drink of alcohol, because it triggered this phenomenon of craving, which separates me from the normal drinkers and from the heavy drinkers and from everybody else except the alcoholics of my type. But I took a drink of alcohol, and 3 days later, they pulled me out from underneath a bridge and stood me in front of a judge and sent me to the Hutchinson State Reform School. 20 years later, I took a drink of alcohol. They pulled me out of a car in Compton and stood me in front of a judge and sent me to 20 years in the penitentiary. Now, that's what happened to me when I drank. I got drunk and went places. I just traveled around out there. I went from reform school to junior penitentiaries to penitentiaries to nut houses. Now they call them treatment centers. I'm a little more partial than Nutch House, a little more macho. Hell, if you're going to be bad, you ought to be bad. I mean, don't quit drinking because you puke a little. Hang in there. Give it everything you got. Alcoholics Anonymous works a hell of a lot better when you run out of options. I threw everything I had into the battle and lost the battle, didn't know what I was fighting. I didn't have an idea what was wrong with me. Not one time did I ever come by one of them institutions and say to myself, self, do you realize how long it's been since you've had a series of those electroshock treatments? Why don't you have a drink? No. I never one time said to myself, I came out of one of them institutions, self, why don't you have a drink of alcohol and go out and kill your baby brother? Why don't you have a drink of alcohol and go out there and destroy everything in your life? Why don't you just tear your mother's heart out, kick it around a little bit more? Why don't you annihilate people and do the things that you do when you run them streets and do them things? Why don't you do that? No. I never one time ever said to myself, I'm going to have a drink of alcohol and go lay down and let them strap me up in a straitjacket someplace. I took a drink of alcohol for the reason alcoholics of my type take a drink of alcohol after being sober for a period of time. It's not to get drunk, it's just to go, whew, and that's all. But you see, that's all my disease really calls for is me to have that moment of weakness. Jim talked about it in his talk. That moment of weakness when I'm in the wrong place, at the wrong time, in the wrong set of circumstances, and I succumb, maybe not to the desire, I just take a drink. It might be a reaction to me if I'm where it's at. But you see, once I take the drink, I'm doomed. Because then the phenomenon of craving takes over. Then and only then. It doesn't happen before I take a drink. It happens after I take a drink. And then I'm powerless not to take the next drink. And it goes over and over and over and over again. And what happened to me a little over 42 years ago, I came to in a cell in solitary confinement at a maximum security penitentiary, drifting in and out of total insanity. What's really significant about that to me today is I sit down at a table and had dinner with some friends and came to a meeting and saw some old friends and people I've known for years and years and years. That day when I came to in that cell, there wasn't a single solitary soul left upon the face of this earth that would send me a penny postcard. They were all gone, but they should be gone. And I didn't have any right to have any of them back. I still don't have any right to have anything good and decent in my life just because I was lucky enough to stumble into your room to get sober and stay that way. Everything in my life, every good thing in my life, every good and decent thing in my life is some type of an unwarranted gift that I received because of my participation, perhaps, of the program called Alcoholics Anonymous and my willingness to give a little just for the hell of giving it. It's the most amazing thing that I know, but I'm a long time from that. I'm a long way from that, crawling around in that cell in solitary confinement. I'm a long way from that. That's what stumbled into your meetings on the fourth day of November, 1959. There wasn't anybody looking for a way out. I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous because the institution I was in let women come in there. Jesus, if they'd had a buffet like that, I'd have been here before they even opened the doors, for Christ's sake. And if you'd have put a lie detector test on my arm when I came in that door and said, you an alcoholic? I said, no, I'm not alcoholic. The needle wouldn't have moved because you can't be something if you don't know what something is. And I didn't know what an alcoholic was. I didn't have a clue about the disease of alcoholism and the effect it had on my life. I didn't know what was going on that day as I sit in that room. I sit in the back row in what I lovingly like to call my throne of contempt. Had my coat collar up and my shades on because I was cool. If I'd have been any cooler, for Christ's sakes, I'd have probably froze to death when I got here. Remember looking up on the backboard seats of a big gate and I thought I'd wander into an anti-aircraft brigade. I didn't know what Alcoholics Anonymous was. I said to this clown sitting next to me, what's this? He says, it's Alcoholics Anonymous. I sunk down in my seat. I didn't want to see the big gangster hanging out with them winos. Then Gangsters Anonymous or Over Hip Anonymous. Dope Fiends Anonymous. I didn't. Every time I think about dope fiends, the chills run up and down my spine, for Christ's sake. Makes addicts seem kind of candy ass, don't it? I mean, I told myself, well, I'll wait for these women to get up and tell their racist stories. And these old gals got up to talk. One of them said she'd drank for a long time. You could look at her, know she'd been somewhere for a long time. She said, I used to drink. I said, I'll bet you did. Bad stuff, too. I knew everything when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm a walking encyclopedia of useless information. I know so damn much about what ain't true, I don't know what is true. And there I sit, for all intents and purposes, a dead man, staring at the answer that I had sold my soul for. But I didn't recognize the answer because I don't know what the problem is. Over and over and over again, I'd like to repeat to you, it's entirely impossible to seek an answer to a problem if you don't know what the problem is. And I don't know what the problem is. I don't have a clue. I'm fascinated by these people. I don't understand them because I've never seen people do things like these people did. These people got up on Sunday morning and left their homes and their families and their TV programs and their football games They drove 180 miles up those old back roads on Sunday morning at their own expense, bought their own gasoline, paid for their own lunch. They spent 2 hours talking to a room full of people who didn't want to listen to them. People like me who sat in the back row and made fun of them. Now, let me tell you how sick that is. Here I am sitting in the penitentiary. I don't know when I'm going home, and I'm making fun of people who are leaving in an hour. But I'm hip. I'm so hip the balls of my feet tickle me when I walk. Being hip is another word for being dense, if you really want to know the truth. Well, you know what my youngest daughter called me the other day? She called me a lame. Said, "Daddy, you're a square." Said, "Thank God I've made it." I damn near died out here. I've almost died here too hip. There'd be people in this room who are going to die because they're too hip to grab this simple program. I damn near missed it. But what kept me coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, what brought me here was you people. I couldn't figure you out. I couldn't figure out why anybody would do what they did. I couldn't figure out why anybody would do that. I asked the guy, "What do you get out of coming up here anyhow?" He said, "When you can answer that question, you won't have to ask it." One of them deep AA answers. But you see, what really the truth, when you can answer that question, then you won't have to ask questions like that either. That's why somebody would come in and set up the meeting. Why somebody would be central office representative. Why somebody would be secretary. Why somebody would want to lead the meeting. Why somebody would set up the kitchen. Why somebody would make coffee. When you can answer those questions, you don't have to ask them anymore. Because you've probably made that little transition. What I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous is, based on my own experience, is simply this. Jim talked about crossing over some invisible line. My old sponsor, Norm Alper, used to talk a great deal about crossing over an invisible line, controlled, uncontrolled drinking. I don't know anything about it. Maybe I was born on the other side of it, as far as I'm concerned. But there's an invisible line here. And if you're an alcoholic of my type and you don't cross over it, you're going to die drunk. Or you're going to blow your brains out. Or you're going to end up in some hospital somewhere with a wet brain, somebody changing your diaper every 2 or 3 hours if you're an alcoholic of my type. And that's the line where you got to cross over from being a taker to being a giver. And you got to give a little just for the hell of giving it. You got to do it. Expect nothing to return. You can't even expect to stay sober by doing it. You just got to do it because you want to do it. It's the most amazing thing that I know of. And when you start doing the things that you're supposed to do around here, just because you want to do it, with no motives, no apprehension, no getting nothing out of it, no pats on the back, no attaboy, none of them kind of stuff, it becomes an amazing thing. I went to a meeting one day. Jim talked a great deal about your moment. My moment came sitting in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous one day, on a Sunday morning. If you'd have told me when I woke up that morning that was the day I was going to go sit down in a room and somebody was going to open up the gates of hell and let me out of there, you'd have a different speaker here tonight. Because I wouldn't have went to an AA meeting. I wasn't conditioned to go to AA members for answers. I was conditioned to go to people who didn't know, the therapists and the psychiatrists and the sociologists and the criminologists. And the lawyers and the judges and my domino partners and my partners on the corner. They had all the answers. Those are the people I went to for answers. I wasn't conditioned to go to drunks for answers, for Christ's sake. See, not armed with that information, thank God, I went and sat in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. A little guy that I knew did 23 fat years in the penitentiary, stood at a podium and told me something I've never forgotten. It makes more sense to me tonight than anything I'll ever know. It'll probably make more sense to me tomorrow than anything I'll wake up with. He stood at that podium, looked down where I was sitting that day, and told me I didn't have to live like that anymore if I didn't want to. That was his message to me. He says, "You don't have to do it like this no more." Nobody had ever told me that. They'd been telling me since I was that high, 7 or 8 years old, I shouldn't drink these things and swallow these things and smoke these things and shoot these things. But they never told me how to live without doing it. Not at all. How many times I've sat down across the table from some of these great learned men, year after year after year, what they told me was, "Johnny, if you didn't drink these things and swallow these things and smoke these things and shoot these things, you wouldn't have any problems." Now, what was confusing to me, like it is to most alcoholics of my type, is every time they told me that, I was as physically sober as I am right now. How many times I wanted to scream out at them, "Good God, doctor, don't you understand?" Because they don't. If you're not an alcoholic, you'll never understand why I drink. But if you're not alcoholic, I'll never understand why you don't. I mean, I don't know. I've been to a few of these conferences around the country, and usually have an Al-Anon speaker there. And some of them women and some of them guys have been through some hellacious things, man. I mean, they got one tragedy right after another. Kids are on dope. The old man's drunk. Blah, blah, blah. The house burned down. Everybody in it. On and on and on. I'm sitting there going, drink, for Christ's sake. You know why they don't drink? Here's what they do when they drink. Ooh. That makes me dizzy. Hell, if it didn't do any more than that for me, I wouldn't drink it either, for Christ's sake. I went up to this little guy after the meeting because I knew him. He gave me the greatest piece of information that anybody could possibly ever give a newcomer. I mean, they bring up a lot of nonsensical stuff from some of these places where they do all this kind of stuff that's supposed to help a newcomer. But this guy gave me the greatest message that you could ever give a newcomer. If you're a newcomer, I'm going to give you the message. He said, Johnny, there's a book called Alcoholics Anonymous in the library. If you go home and get it, I'll go home and pray that you find some part of you in it. I guess he's prayed real hard, that little fellow, because I've been a student of that book from that day to this day, and the only thing I've ever found in that book is me. I'm not looking for anything else. I'm not looking for a way to sober up the world or cure all society's ills or walk hand in hand in the universe and all that other nonsense. I'm just looking for a way to live peacefully and comfortably and joyously with me and you and God. That's all. The phenomena that takes place in my life, and my life is really the only one I know anything about, the closer I adhere to the principles that are written in this book, and the more willing I become to share that knowledge in this fellowship, just for the sheer joy of doing it, the more peaceful and the more comfortable and the more joyous I live with me and the loving God in me. That's about as simple as I can tell you, and that's about as much about Alcoholics Anonymous that I know. The more I'm willing to do in Alcoholics Anonymous, the better my life gets. I can't sit back and wait for somebody to bring it to me. I've got to go get it. I came out of that penitentiary on the fourth day of June, 1961, armed with only one thing, that somewhere in this period of time that I was in this institution, I had completed to the best of my ability the first nine steps of our program of recovery. I made the great discovery of my life, sitting in this room, taking a fifth step with this man. I heard myself say to him, I was an alcoholic. And from that moment to this moment, I've known exactly what's wrong with me. It's something I didn't know up to that moment. I didn't know what was wrong with me. I had all these images that I thought I was a convict. I thought I was a killer. I thought I was a big, badass dope fiend. I thought I was a lot of things. But I didn't know I suffered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body that's called alcoholism. From the moment of admittance to right this very moment, I've known exactly what's wrong with me. I know exactly where the solution is. And it's been my great privilege to be allowed to participate in this fellowship of recovery called Alcoholics Anonymous from that day to this day. All my efforts in any type of program of recovery that I involve is involved here, because I can't work three or four different types of things from time to time. I walked out of that penitentiary in June 1961. I came out to a world I didn't know anything about. I mean, a lot of people know about it. I don't know anything about it. I'd never spent a day out there in them streets since I was 7 years old without some type of a chemical additive in my system. The last 14 years of my life before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I used heroin, but I wasn't drinking. We had a guy say that the other night at one of our book study meetings. He says, it's about drinking. I'm sober. I ain't drinking. Just use a little heroin from time to time. We told him, good. Keep coming back. One guy said, well, maybe in your case, maybe you ought to just stay here. What I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous is to be sober is to be sober is to be sober. I walked out of that penitentiary that day. I went home to see my mother. She fell off the steps blind drunk. I picked her up and put her on the couch and said, Mom, I'm going to an AA meeting. She said, fine, I think you should. I like to stand here and say, my mother got sober and my dog got sober and my cat got sober and my family got sober and we're the sober, sober, sobers. Outside of my lovely wife and I, the only people in my family are sober. I watched my mother drink herself to death. Tell me about this disease. I had a ringside seat watching my mother drink herself to death. Took her 30 years, but she made it. It'll get you. You persist in this illusion long enough, it will get you. It may take a while, but sooner or later, you get every living thing you got. And we get every living thing you got, then one of these days, it's going to reach down inside of you and pull every last thing you got inside of you out. What I learned from my mother is I don't have the power to get anybody sober. I don't have the power to get them drunk either. I don't even have any power to keep me sober. Where in the hell would I get any power at? I didn't come here with any power. I came here powerless. I'm still powerless. I got a daily reprieve. This is my day. I got no yitches. I don't get to stay sober because I've been sober, for Christ's sake. I don't get to stay sober because I went to a panel last month. I don't get to stay sober because I was in a meeting last night or the night before. I don't get to stay sober. I get to stay sober for my willingness to try to live sober one day at a time and do what I say I'm going to do today. That's all. To be where I say I'm going to be. Do what I say I'm going to do. To be accountable for my actions. It doesn't make me a spiritual giant or something among many. It doesn't make anything at all. It just makes me a responsible human being. I can't run around here and act like I'm irresponsible because I ain't drinking. I hear that all the time. Well, I'm not drinking, you know. Maybe you ought to go drink then, for Christ's sake. I love this. I love my book tells me. You don't believe you're alcoholic? Go drink, for Christ's sake. We're going to be here. I went to a meeting one night, and a guy said to me, you want to talk about God? I said, probably. Why? I said, oh, you should mention God. Why? I said to him. He said, well, the newcomers may run them out of A. Let me give you newcomers some bits of encouragement. If God will run you out of AA, whiskey will run your rusty butt back in here. You know, that's the last thing in the world my mother ever saw. The last thing. If you'd have said to my mother 1 minute before she died, if you'd have said to her, aren't you proud of your son, Johnny, man? He come out of them streets, out of them gangs, out of them penitentiaries. He found out he's alcoholic. He joined that A&A, man. He lives a good, normal, decent life out there. Raised his kids, got a couple grandkids on the road. Doing good. My mother would look at you with all the sincerity of your life and say, my son's not alcoholic. Not an alcoholic. Life got a lot better when he quit running around with the Mexicans. See, I was raised around Mexicans. I ran the gangs with them. All my mother could see was the results of how me changing my action, but she could not bring it to be if she was an alcoholic. I guess if I indoctrinated in some of these drying out joints, probably some of this intellectual mumble jumble you hear around some of these meetings, I guess I could probably tell you, they'd probably say, I guess your mama was in a state of denial. Let me tell you about my book. My book does not talk about a denial. My book talks about a delusion. The alcoholic is suffering from a delusion that someday, somehow, they're going to control and enjoy their drinking. The great obsession of every abnormal drinking. You know what a denial is? It's a lie. Somebody says he's in denial, he's a liar. And anybody tells me he's in denial, I tell him he's a liar. You know why I know that? Because every time I got arrested, I denied I did it. Oh, I didn't do that. I deny that. That's just the truth of the matter. But you see, if you're not alcoholic, what the hell difference does it make anyhow? But if you're just a heavy drinker or a little drug user, it isn't necessary if it have any type of a spiritual awakening. It isn't necessary for you to clean up the wreckage of your past. It isn't necessary for you to go out there and try to give a little just for the hell of giving it. Give you a busy time, be accountable for your actions. It isn't necessary at all. All you got to do is quit drinking or quit using drugs. So, book talks about that. Book talks about it on page 22. Heavy drinkers can quit drinking given any type of reasonable excuse. Job threatening, wife threatening, sweetheart threatening, whatever. And just because you use drugs does not make you an alcoholic either. Anybody can be a drug addict. All it takes is drugs. That's all. But that's not alcoholism. Alcoholism, the way it's described in this book, in the doctor's opinion, is what alcoholism is. It's not what it is not. And if you're new and you want to find out whether you had this seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, then you ought to read the doctor's opinion in our book, Alcoholics Anonymous. Take my word for it. And if you fulfill those conditions, or if it has any type of similarities to you, you may be in the right place. I can't stand here and tell you every meal I've eaten has been a banquet. Every day I've lived out there on the sunny side of the street, or I'm one of them spiritual giants around here who does nothing wrong, everything good. I'm just a basic human being. That's all. I'm a guy who's learned to live in a world without having to use any type of chemical additives in my system to make me equal to everybody else in the world. I'm a guy who's learned to live in a world with some type of peace and happiness, who's able to live in a home with a woman that he loves, who'd love to have a host of friends that he cares for, they're more concerned about him than I am about myself most of the time. I had a guy said the other day, he said, what keeps you sober? I told him, I don't know. I haven't got a clue what keeps me sober. He said, well, is it God? And I said, I don't know. You know, a lot of people think God's keeping them sober. That's fine. Is it the book? I don't really know. Is it going to meetings? I don't know. Is it working with others? I don't know. Is it working them steps? I don't know. He said, well, what do you mean? I said, I don't know what keeps me sober. The type of sicko I am, if I had some type of an idea that I knew what kept me sober, I'd quit doing everything else. But my track record is such that I wouldn't make the right choice. So I just have to keep doing it all. That's all. I have to keep sponsoring these people. I have to keep going to these dumb meetings. I have to keep sitting in the same chair on Monday night that I sat in for the last 28 years. I have to keep going where I'm asking to go. I have to pick up the telephone and say, okay, the date's open, it's yours. I got to try to practice these principles to the best of my ability. I got to go out there and try to earn a living every day. I got to do what everybody else got to do. I learned that from a sponsor who was more concerned with saving my life than he was hurting my feelings. It wasn't any touchy-feely when I got sober. You don't like it here? Get the hell out of here. Jesus, that sounds kind of cruel, don't it? Why waste space? I'll tell you, if I didn't want to be sober, if I didn't want to do anything with Alcoholics Anonymous, Saturday night is someplace else to go besides to an AA meet. The biggest thing in my life is not standing at the buffet table at the coffee break. I'm sorry. I mean, I hate to offend you, but that's really the truth of the matter, for Christ's sake. The biggest thing in my life is that I can walk home today, come in my house, and my wife puts her arms around me and gives me a kiss and told me she loves me. My little dog is happy to see me. Yeah. I can go sit down at the table and have dinner with some friends. I can drive over to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and see some friends that I haven't seen for a while, just like I saw them yesterday. It's the most amazing thing that I know. If you're new or youth in Alcoholics Anonymous, give it a shot, for Christ's sake. What have you got to lose? If you're new in Alcoholics Anonymous, I can tell you something about you right now. Your year hasn't been too good up to this point. I'll tell you that. We know more about you than you know about you, if you want to know the truth. If you really want to laugh, walk up to an old-timer and tell him your plan. Some of us haven't had a good laugh in a long time, for Christ's sake. But if you're new, I'm guaranteeing you have a plan. You have a plan. I don't. I'm going to go get in my car tonight. I'm going to drive my lovely wife home, and we're going to go to our little house. And I'm going to get up tomorrow morning. I'm going to go on a picnic that my home group is throwing. And I'm going to have another day of sobriety if I live to wake up tomorrow morning. My life is very good, really. I've learned how to love people. I hear things in Alcoholics Anonymous I don't quite agree with, but I don't have to agree with them. I hear people say things, I had to learn to love me before I could love you. I know you've heard that. I had to learn to forgive me before I could forgive you. I don't even like me sometimes. So how in the hell could I love me? I do not have the ability to forgive me most of the time for my shortcomings and my things that I do and my little nickel and dime compromises that I make in life sometimes today and the jackpot that I give myself. I haven't got the ability to forgive me. Not at all. But I've never not loved Alcoholics Anonymous and its people. From the moment I sat in that meeting on the 4th day of November, 1959, I've loved AA and its people. I didn't know that. I had to be something that had to be uncovered and discovered here sitting in these rooms with you. So if you're new or youth in Alcoholics Anonymous, I pray God that whatever I say makes any sense, makes any sense to you at all. I really don't know. Just go to another meeting tomorrow. That's all. Jim, first 10-minute speaker, told you everything you need to know. Just go to meeting. Go to meetings. Go to meeting. Go to meeting. Find some fool around here that's sober and do what they're doing. And when they quit doing it, find somebody else that's sober and do what they're doing. Because whether you like it or whether you don't like it, if you're an alcoholic of my type, your life is in the balance. This is a matter of life and death, and it's my life, and I'm going to keep doing it. A guy that I sponsored one time came to me and gave me a little saying that I love. It's the greatest piece of truth that I know of. He said to me, if you keep doing what you're doing, you're going to keep getting what you're getting. Now, over in Bellflower, where I go to meetings, they think that is earth-shattering. They go, wow! Was there a little dent over there? But it means exactly what it means. And exactly what it says. That's the greatest piece of truth you're ever going to hear in your lifetime. Keep doing what you're doing, you're going to keep getting what you're getting. That means if you're sitting in here with guilt and a big knot in your gut and you're restless and you're irritable and you're discontent, keep on doing what you're doing. You're going to keep getting what you're getting. There ain't no way to beat the deal. You've got to change your actions. You can't change your actions by changing your thinking. You've got to change your thinking by changing your action. But the other side of that coin is, if you're sitting in this meeting and you're happy and you're joyous and there's some peacefulness inside of you, and you're right where you want to be doing what you want to do, then you should keep on doing what you're doing, because you're surely going to keep on getting what you're getting. I don't know about another living soul that lives upon the face of this earth. I don't live inside of anybody else's skin. But I can tell you, for me and only for me, I'm going to keep on doing what I've been doing, because I sure do like what I've been getting. Thank you.
Let's thank our speakers, Jim D. and Johnny H. And our readers, Paul and Bob. This is a large meeting. We encourage participation, especially if you're new. Being of service is a way we are able to give back to the group that which has been so freely given to our sobriety. We need 8 volunteers to help with cleanup. May I see some hands, please? Thank you. Okay. Will the cleanup chairman, Art, please stand? And oh, Arden. All right, thank you. Court cards are signed and may be picked up here at the podium after the meeting. Now, after a moment's meditation for the alcoholic who still suffers, please stand and join me in the Serenity Prayer.